Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh, yeah. We started to burn too many things we found. That's the amazing and wonderful Dar Williams singing with the legendary Pete Seeger and David Burns, who wrote the lyrics to the song, except for the word Solartopia, which I wrote. That won a Grammy on the Grammy award-winning album, Tomorrow's Children, from Apple Seed Records. We have a spectacular guest with us today, Josh Fox. Josh, you with us, buddy?
Oh, yeah, I'm right here. Happy to be with you.
All right. Oh, yeah, it's the right response. We are both in Los Angeles today. I watched Josh Fox, who is the producer, director, and star of the Academy Award-nominated Gasland film, also Gasland Part 2, Best Documentary, lots of awards. Josh gave a tremendous, magnificent, incredibly riveting personal performance last night in Los Angeles, a one-man show, The Truth Has Changed, which is touring. And if it's in your area, do not miss it. Josh is a brilliant, brilliant performer, a fabulous journalist, and has really got on to, I would say, two of the most important issues facing the human race at the moment. Number one being fracking and the use and abuse of fossil fuels, and number two, the sickening, terrifying, and utterly destructive data processing conspiracy or juggernaut or Koch-funded assault on all of human life being run through Cambridge Analytica, the truly horrible fascist Steve Bannon, and that whole crew of totalitarian Trumpites that threatens all life on Earth. Both those topics were covered incredibly brilliantly by Josh last night, and we're going to go through this. I'm sure many of my listeners, you guys out there, are familiar with Josh's work. He's been a contributing journalist to Rolling Stone, The Daily Beast, online with Now This, has somehow struck up a relationship with Tucker Carlson, kind of like Dennis Rodman getting to know Kim Jong-un, but we'll see about that.
That's funny.
Yeah, I have nominated, by the way, I don't know if you saw the piece, my listeners, and also you, Josh, I have nominated Dennis Rodman for the Nobel Prize. He is the only Western person, diplomat without portfolio, I guess you call him, that's been able to somehow tame or communicate with Kim Jong-un. And who knows, maybe Dennis Rodman, the great NBA star, very quirky, of course, has prevented nuclear war. I don't know, but let's give it a shot. I have nominated for an Academy Award. You can sign for the Nobel Prize. You can sign the petition at moveon.org. So, Josh, let's get into it. You're a busy man and a brilliant one. You've worked alongside Bill McKibben, Nina Turner, Ben Jealous, Susan Sarandon, Jane Cleave, Dr. Cornel West. You performed at Tim Robbins' Artist Space last night. It was a beautiful place. And what's it called? Artist's Nest, right?
It's called the Actors Gang.
Actors
the
Gang.
Actors right, Gang Paul Theater.
Park. Yeah, beautiful
City
theater.
There.
Perfect for a one-man show, by the way. It was really very, very nicely done. In Culver City, south of L.A. So let's start right in with fracking, and then we're going to talk about Cambridge Analytica.
Sure.
Give us the story, which is a riveting one. Not unlike mine, by the way. I'll tell you, I was living on a hippie farm in Massachusetts in 1973 when the local utility came in and announced they were going to build a nuclear power plant 4 miles from my house. We're actually thrilled because we knew we were going to stop them. And my whole life kind of flashed in front of me in 1973. And now in 2018, the vision I saw really was pretty accurate. So tell us, in helping you start and working with the No Nukes Movement, Start Nuclear Power, Stop Nuclear Power, you had a somewhat parallel experience. Tell us how you got involved with fracking, and then tell us what you've done.
Well, in 2008, my family, who our original home, which was built by hand by my parents, my mother and father, and my aunts and uncles, and the sort of weird hippie house that I entered the world into in the Upper Delaware River Basin in Pennsylvania, which is the watershed area for New York City and for southern New Jersey and Philadelphia, meaning 18 million people or so get their water directly from that area. And it's a beautiful, pristine wildlife wetlands with trout streams and ponds and the most beautiful woods. I mean, it's an area that, you know, a great deal of economics relies upon being pure because New York City gets their water from there, and that's worth billions and billions of dollars. Well, anyway, the natural gas industry, or I like to call them the fracked gas industry, because all that natural gas is not really natural, it's actually fracked at this point, came to us, as they came to everyone in the neighborhood, all my neighbors, and offered us money to lease our land to natural gas drilling and fracking. And no one at that time in 2008 really knew what the word fracking was. What it stands for is hydraulic fracturing. They pump 2 to 7 million gallons worth of water into the substrata, and they inject it at such high pressures. These pressures rival cluster bombs. And that fracking water is laced with things that we call fracking fluids. Those fracking fluids are carcinogens, neurotoxins, endocrine disrupting chemicals, plastics, foaming agents, gelants, petroleum distillates. And when they inject all that stuff, it fractures the substrate, and the substrate is often radioactive or full of volatile organic compounds such as benzene. They bring all that back up to the surface, and they put it in a huge big pit, which leaches and leaks off into the atmosphere, and it hurts people's health, and it hurts the groundwater because the wells leak directly into the aquifers that they have to punch through to get to the substrata. And then they extract the frack gas. A lot of it leaks out into the atmosphere, which is very bad for the climate because methane is one of the most potent greenhouse gases that we have. And then they try to hook us into becoming dependent on using that frack gas for our electricity power generation. A lot of America is retiring our old coal, and they're positing frack gas as a replacement for that coal. So I didn't know anything about that at the time. All I knew was that they were offering us $100,000 for 19 acres, approximately $5,000 an acre, to lease our land, our family's 20 acres, to the frack gas industry. And I went to go investigate that. And what I found was a really horrific crisis, an environmental catastrophe, a health crisis, and that fracking was happening in 34 states across America, and that people were really deeply oppressed and harmed by this practice, and very few people were reporting on it because it was by and large in disparate rural areas and not near major media centers. When the frack gas industry came to New York, however, that changed all of that, and Gasland as a film was able to define that industry and tell people exactly what this fracking monster is.
Right. So fracking basically is a vampire technology. I mean, we are a species that is so desperate for energy that you would think that anyway. Someone coming from outer space would think, oh, this species is just blowing their planet apart and poisoning every aspect of this beautiful Earth in order to get energy. And, of course, we don't need it because we have, as you and I discussed last night, renewable energy, solar and wind, that's completely bypasses the need, any possible need for fracked gas. And yet here they are, here we are, these corporations, which are totally for-profit, and for which there's no feedback mechanism for the destruction of the Earth. They pay no cost for destroying the Earth. They are literally making this planet uninhabitable in order to suck out the last bit of energy which they really could get from other sources. Is that a fair appraisal?
Well, I agree with, much of what you said, but I think the truth of the matter is that we have abundant energy on the planet Earth. And yes. It's called solar, it's called wind, it's called geothermal, and we now have abundant and sophisticated technology to harness the renewable energy that will free and empower this planet. The oil industry is what's desperate, and the oil industry is a system of economic dependency, almost like an addiction, like a drug deal, where the oil industry has everybody hooked on their product, and they don't want to see the earth go into rehab. They don't want to see us realize that our ways are destroying ourselves and destroying our planet and go towards renewable energy, the sun and the wind. So they're finding increasingly nefarious and dastardly ways of influencing our governments worldwide to do their crazy new techniques of ever more destructive fossil fuel extraction. I think Al Gore, I don't remember exactly who said this, but like, you know, a junkie shoots into their arm until the veins in their arms are no good anymore, and then they got to start shooting in their leg. I think that what this is, you know, we're shooting that frac fluid in a desperate fashion, and using this technique, it is so destructive and so dangerous. And it's now becoming a prevalent and pervasive force throughout the United States, thanks to the neoliberal policies, by and large, not just of George Bush and Dick Cheney, but also Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. And this was a major sticking point in the 2016 election. Thank God Bernie Sanders came out and started telling the truth about fracking and how it was a horrible thing for us to be doing, and we needed to ban it and phase it out immediately. This was one of the major, major mistakes, I believe, that Hillary Clinton made in the last election. I believe had Hillary Clinton adopted a strong position on fracking, she would be the president right now. She wouldn't have lost all those votes to Jill Stein in Michigan and Wisconsin and in Pennsylvania. And I think also, let's say something about the truth here. The truth is, we cannot develop more fossil fuels. We cannot develop more fracking. We cannot develop a dependency on frack gas, which is being promoted throughout this United States, if we want to do anything serious about climate change, if we want to do anything serious about environmental justice, and if we want to do anything serious about protecting our water. So we have to stand up for the truth here. We have to tell the Democrats, the Republicans, and the independents alike, fracking cannot be the next wave of power in America. And that is exactly what's being proposed. 300 frack gas power plants are proposed to be a next 3 to 4 decades, and a whole other generation of power supply in America, and we have to fight that. Thankfully, in California, a lot of people are fighting it. A lot of people are saying, well, we don't want gas peaker plants, is what they're called, for peak load. We want to use solar and wind. California is actually leading the way in doing that. But the rest of the country is building frack gas power plants like nobody's business. There are advisors that are paid millions and millions of dollars to advise local city councils and states and governments. And they are coming from the frack gas industry, and they're trying to push us 3 to 4 more decades of dependency on this fuel. That means 2 million new fracking wells. It means hundreds of thousands of miles of pipelines. And it means hundreds, if not thousands, of communities completely disrupted, torn apart, toxified, scarred, and ripped to shreds by this industry all across the United States of America. We have to make sure that we fight against that and continue that education.
We're talking with Josh Fox, the magnificent, brilliant director, producer, and star of Gasland, Gasland 2, and his own one-man show, which is now touring the country. The truth has changed. I am absolutely terrified by fracking, as I am by nuclear power. These are the twin satanic forces threatening all human life on this planet in the name of energy. So let's jump back a bit. You were offered $100,000 by the fracking company to come onto your land, what did you do?
Well, I went and made a movie because I didn't know what they were talking about, you know. And nobody really understood fracking at that time. It wasn't in the vernacular. It was actually spelled FRAC-ING, hydraulic fracturing. And it was a relatively obscure story. And I went and pursued it. I drove all around the country. I interviewed people who were on the front lines of fracking in I don't know, a dozen states. I traveled to 25 states. So I did interviews in Pennsylvania and New York and Texas, Colorado, Wyoming, Arizona, Louisiana, Arkansas, and found an environmental catastrophe. People who were, their towns were completely toxified. You had toxic pits all over the place, Halliburton trucks swarming, heavy machinery spewing black smoke into people's backyards, and then the fracking wells themselves coming in the hundreds or coming in the thousands. You're talking about drilling oil and gas wells in next to people's houses, and those oil and gas wells are like a gas station that's perpetually leaking fuel into the groundwater and in leaching fumes into the air. You're talking about volatile organic compounds wafting in people's bedrooms and folks getting really sick, brain cancers, strange respiratory ailments, rashes, skin. Ailments, a lot of brain damage, peripheral neuropathy, paralysis in the limbs, the workers in the gas rigs getting strange diseases, people dying, people getting sick, their animals getting sick, their children getting sick. And of course, that phenomenon well documented in the film of the natural gas, of the frack gas itself leaching into the aquifer, and then people's water wells becoming full of frack gas. And then when they turn the faucet on, lo and behold, the water is bubbling and fizzing, and it's flammable. They can light it on fire, as well as chemicals and other fracking fluids and substances that are leaching into the groundwater. And these things, this can't be corrected. You can't get the contamination of benzene or plastics or petroleum distillates back out of the aquifer. The groundwater needs to be pure. The mother needs to be pure if it's going to sustain life. So, you know, this is what I found when I made that film, and I reported on it. And the film went to Sundance Film Festival. It was an independent movie made by myself and a few other people, Matt Sanchez, Alex Tyson, Molly Gander, Trisha Lessig, and really a five-person team interviewing hundreds of people across the country. Went to Sundance. It won the special jury prize. It was picked up by HBO that broadcast it into 40 million homes. It was nominated for the Oscar for Best Documentary. It won Best Directing Emmy and the four other Emmy nominations, and went all across the world to an estimated audience of 50 million people. And you know, we respelled fracking. We put the K into fracking, and fracking became a household word. That was a very amazing circumstance from being a concerned citizen with a cheap prosumer video camera to making a film that went all around the world. And of course, I was in the theater before that. I'd made 25 plays. I was no stranger to sculpting a narrative, to telling a story, to figuring out that kind of format. But it certainly was like being shot out of a cannon and thrust into the spotlight. And then I was subject to a five-year, $50 to $100 million smear campaign mounted by the oil industry. And at the time, that smear campaign was orchestrated in many ways by people that we know very well right now. Andrew Breitbart of Breitbart.com. Steve Bannon, one of the people who was really coming out hardcore at me against fracking, and I have a tale to tell about what those guys do and how good they are at creating slander and smear and misinformation, and what a tremendous and terrifying and anti-democratic role they played in the last election. And that's what my new
These guys are fascists, pure and simple. I think, you know, we're starting to see the use of, the longer Trump is with us, the more we see the proper term used, which is fascist, which has a very clear historical definition. Benito Mussolini, Trump's spiritual godfather, coined the term fascist, which basically is five words: corporate control of the state, and that's what we're into. So, Josh, let's do a quick wrap on the environmental and other impacts of fracking, and then I do want you to tell the tale of your being pursued and assaulted by these guys, and then we'll go to Cambridge Analytica. So fracking itself, the so-called natural gas is very much methane is very much a greenhouse gas, far worse mm-hmm. than CO2, and it also destroys the most precious asset we have on this planet, which is water. I guess water and air would be the two, followed by food. But you have a history very parallel to what we discovered with atomic energy, which health impacts that, of course, are vehemently and roundly and very financially well paid with denials from the industry. I'm going to assume that the fracking industry And it's interesting you coined fracking, you know, we coined no nukes. Boats have really stuck. And I'm assuming that the industry came at you first and foremost, we'll get into the personal stuff, with denials of any of the health impacts. I did see one of the counter films. I can't remember what it was called. It was really obnoxious. And they very much cited your film. And they had some doofy guy go in and interview people in fracking areas where fracking were being done, and they were complaining that their health was perfectly wonderful and that you and your work was costing them all sorts of money, and they couldn't send their kids to college and buy shoes and had to walk 6 miles to school through a snowstorm. So what kind of garbage did the industry throw at you in terms of health and environmental impact?
Well, that's a lot of different questions at once. I mean, in terms of the fracking impact, which is, I think, the first part of it, I would sort that into five major categories. The local impacts, localized groundwater contamination, localized industrialization and toxification of the local area, and that means toxic pits and machinery and fumes and localized groundwater contamination. I would say regionally, an air pollution problem. That's number two. Regionally, it affects people in terms of the quality of air. You know, we saw in the Barnett Shale the asthma rate go to 25% among 10-year-olds because the air is so poisoned by hundreds or tens of thousands of gas wells in the area. And I would say that the contamination spread to the global level. Methane, as you mentioned, 100 times more potent than carbon dioxide in the atmosphere as a warming agent. And a huge amount of methane going into the atmosphere as a result of fracking, and plus a more dependency on fossil fuels. We are burning all that gas and creating CO2. So the global impact is global warming, accelerating climate change, way past any of our climate targets. There's a huge methane spike in the atmosphere that NASA can measure. 65 or 80% of it, something like that, is due to the oil and gas industry, contrary to what the animal agriculture people will say. The animal agriculture is a big, big section of methane, and it's very, very, very bad for the atmosphere. Everyone should stop eating industrialized meat because of climate change. However, fracking is far, far worse in terms of climate change, in terms of methane. I would say the fourth impact is an impact on our governments and on our democracy. The frack gas industry spreads so much cash around. It's as if they're injecting high-pressure amounts of money into our chambers of lawmakers and forcing them to break with the public. Frack gas is so powerful at the government level, it represents pollution of our democracy. We saw this in the case of the Obama administration. We saw this in the case of a lot of Democrats, and we definitely see this in terms of Republicans. They deny all impacts of fracking. They say it's great for us. It's all wonderful. We should go ahead with it. It's wonderful, beautiful, terrific. That's a fourth impact. And the fifth and final impact, which I think I'm focusing on in this new piece, The Truth Has Changed, is the impact on the media. The media should be a purveyor of verifiable, fact-checked information, and not smear and misinformation and slander and not propaganda and PR and not doublespeak. But the media has been so deeply corrupted by the oil industry that it happens in several ways. The oil industry will pay for advertisements and then dictate to certain news channels, no, you may not put these certain people on air because we don't want to hear from them. We'll blacklist people. The media will also kill certain stories. And then in a way, they'll also foster other stories. Like the oil industry is a major sponsor of, Fox News. And a lot of the smear and misinformation and propaganda that comes out into our media in the United States can be directly traced back to money from the oil industry. And certainly in this last election, we talk a lot lately about the Russia investigation, about troll farms, about bots, about Facebook. Well, you know, yes, a lot of that is true. Vladimir Putin has control over his state oil company. He has control over his elections. He definitely had a vendetta against Hillary Clinton. And there were clearly things that were interference. But ExxonMobil has been tampering in our elections, and the Koch brothers have been tampering in our elections, and Steve Bannon have been tampering with our media and our sense of truth for decades. And that's perfectly legal. It's legal for ExxonMobil to tamper with our elections. It's legal for ExxonMobil to tamper with the climate. This should be on the front page of every newspaper every single day, the nefarious techniques with which they promote completely false ideas. Climate change is a hoax. Fracking is fine. Everything, you know, in Gasland is a lie. These are things that they've been doing for a very, very long time, and they did them increasingly effectively in the 2016 presidential election because Facebook and Google allow their algorithms and certain practices that exist within how they administer and perpetuate media to be based on people's personal algorithms. People's personal algorithms tell the machine a lot about each of us individually. Cambridge Analytica amassed 4,000 to 5,000 data points on every adult American. What does that mean? That means they got inside of people's heads. They grouped people's insecurities. They grouped people's psychological profiles. They marketed directly to them with specific political messages aimed at specific people. And this was demonstrably effective. At first, they took Ted Cruz from the most hated and ugly and weird politician on earth and brought him almost to the point where he could have captured the Republican nomination. Once they dropped Ted Cruz, then they picked up Donald Trump. Donald Trump was able to use psychographic data, in other words, data that's different than demographics. Demographics is your age, your race, where you live, your income, things like that. Psychographics is what are you like on the inside? Are you open? Are you conscientious? Are you introverted? Are you anal? Are you neurotic? And they used those specific psychographic characteristics, which they gleaned from Facebook and Google and all the things that we like and all of the data that they assembled on all these people. Because, you know, your cell phone at one level is a constantly evolving, deeper and deeper, more detailed psychological data test that you're filling out all the time. Everywhere that you go, the phone knows. Everything that you search for, everything that you know, everything that you don't know, everything that you buy, everything that you contemplate buying but can't afford. These are files that are algorithmically kept on every single person in the United States, and therefore certain political messages can be targeted to certain people. For example, Facebook found ways that advertise. Let's say if you wanted to advertise an apartment and you wanted to specify that only white people, no black people, could see that apartment listing. Facebook allowed you to do that. 21st century Jim Crow, and no one would know. Well, that's really illegal and nefarious, and it's segregation. However, they could also do things like, you know, target black men only with messages specifically saying that Hillary Clinton was a racist. You should stay home, or you should vote for Jill Stein. Now, this is not going to be pervasively effective to a majority of people, but they know enough percentages that they can get this across. And Cambridge Analytica had a hand in many, many different elections. First, it was the 2013 election in Kenya. Then it was Ukraine in 2014. Then Brexit. Then the Brazilian impeachment process, the Mexican election, the Malaysian and Australian elections. And then, of course, in 2016, when we were all being psychographically manipulated and pushed into different corners of the electorate, in a way that is almost as akin to intellectual voter disenfranchisement, America elects a racist, authoritarian, climate change denying, barbarian as president. And they were a crucial factor in that strike. But it's also crucial to understand that this has to do with how stories are going to be told in the future, how information is going to be dispensed in the future, what sources are going to be seen as legitimate and what are not, and how you're going to get each and every piece of information tailored specifically to you based on your personal algorithm. This is already happening. You will get different Google search results based on who you are than a person who's sitting right next to you, because Google understands your psychographic algorithm and they're going to tailor that content specifically to you. It's the balkanization of truth.
We're talking with Josh Fox. Josh, the producer, director, star of Gasland and Gasland 2 and much more. Also, you have a film about the Dakota Pipeline, and I want to talk to you about that in a minute. How do people get a hold of you, Josh, and tell us about your tour schedule?
Sure. Well, so the last 4 years, the last decade, I've made four different environmental documentaries that are part of a series, really. Gasland Part 1, Gasland Part 2, a film called How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change. And then there was Awake, A Dream from Standing Rock, which is a collaboration film. I'm one of the directors on that, and that's on Netflix. The first three films are on HBO. My Twitter handle is at Josh Fox Film. There's several Facebook pages, Josh Fox, my own personal page, and then there's a fan page. There's a Gasland page. There are many websites, GaslandTheMovie.com, HowToLetGoMovie.com, SolutionsGrassroots.org, AwakeTheFilm.org. And we are just launching, I think it's JoshFoxFilm.com. And that shows you information about what we're doing with The Truth Has Changed. The Truth Has Changed will be a performance that right now we're doing sort of a workshop version of it, which you witnessed last night. And I'm so thankful that you were there and that you loved it so much. And we had a really terrific night last night. And I'm doing it again in San Francisco on June 3rd. I think that's Sunday. And then in New York on June 6th. That's next Wednesday. And so we're warming it up. We're starting to understand what it's about. It will open officially on 9/11. September 11th in New York City at the Town Hall, and it will play for two nights, September 11th and September 12th, and then it will travel to the Wexner in Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, and then make its way all across the country in support of progressive candidates in the 28-turn midterm cycle. I'm working with Our Revolution, Bernie Sanders and Nina Turner, wonderful organization that endorses progressive candidates all across America. And we've been winning a lot of races. We've won 50% of our races so far. Our Revolution came about after Bernie Sanders called upon people across America to run for office, from dog catcher all the way up to the president. You know, run. And a lot of people answered that call. Our Revolution is getting a lot of progressives into office and a lot of wonderful victories, and I'm seeing that movement grow right now. So Our Revolution is going to help us determine where we go and which candidates we can try to help with this piece on the road throughout the fall of 2018. And at the culmination of the tour, we'll be here in UCLA, the Royce Hall, on October 27th. And that's 1,800 seats, so we're going to need a lot of people to come out and see that show on that night. So this was our original sort of intimate showing for a few friends at the Actors Gang last night, about 100 people, and we have to multiply that by 18 at the Royce Hall in Los Angeles on October 27th. We're very excited to be partnering with California for Progress, with Our Revolution, with a number of different California and Los Angeles-based environmental and progressive organizations to put on that show October 27th. The Truth Has Changed will also be published.
We'll line up with
It'll be published as a book.
Oh, yeah, you're going to publish the performance as a book?
It will be published as a book by Seven Stories Press in conjunction with the September 11th opening. So the book version is slightly different, a little bit more elaborate than the performance version. So we encourage people to get the book as well and be able to have it to read it. So, that's the plan. Thank you. And in 2019, it will be a feature film. It'll be a feature film in 2019. So.
And that will be your one-man show. So in the tradition of Spalding Gray, Swimming in Cambodia, it's beautifully written, Josh, thrilling, infuriating, terrifying. You can use all those words in your Variety review. And we will work with you certainly at Pacific KPFK when you come back to L.A. You also need, and I will email you the contacts for my home base, the Columbus Free Press, freepress.org, with Bob Trakas and Suzanne Panzer in Columbus. Which is a very big deal. And it's and folks listening in, you need to contact Josh at the many contacts he's given you, and I'll have you repeat a couple of them before we leave so that you can have this network built for you as you travel around. You'll be glad to know, by the way, that last week's guest on my show was Danny Sheehan and Sarah Nelson, who are involved with Standing Rock, defending Chase Iron Eyes in that whole situation up there, which is just unbelievable. And your descriptions of Standing Rock and the sweat you did were extremely powerful. And I'm sure anybody with any interest in the environment and in the indigenous culture and the interplay between the two will be fascinated to hear, see, and read and listen to all of that. So, Josh Fox, you part of your presentation was, of course, much of what you just said about Cambridge Analytica, the use of data mining and techniques of manipulation by Steve Bannon and the Koch brothers and the whole fascist crew there. Quite devastating and, of course, important. And we also have had, and of course, I've worked, we witnessed in 2004 the theft of the Ohio election, about which John Kerry has yet to say a public word. My co-writer, Bob Fitrakis, has been on with us many times, and you'll meet him in Columbus. And so another dimension to all this is the ability of the Koch brothers and their minions and the millions. Actually, they said they're putting $400 million into this 2018 election.
Into the midterms,
Another 30 or 40 is coming from Sheldon Adelson. So we really have our work cut out for us. We have shown that we can defeat big money in mm-hmm. elections, but it's definitely an uphill fight, and it's made worse by the fact that our voting machines have been rigged and the voter rolls, as Greg Palast has shown, are being stripped based on, of course, race and all the Analytica data that the Cambridge has put together. So here's the question for you. Against all this formidable firepower, the billions of dollars the Koch brothers, and I got to say, you know, it always amazes me. These people are so sick. I mean, the Koch brothers have $30, $40 billion to their name. I mean, do they need more money? Are they afraid they're not going to have a place to sleep and enough to eat? What do they really need more money for? It's just beyond definite flaw in the human genetic makeup that yields us people who think that $30 or $40 million in their private bank accounts is not enough, and they somehow need more money, and they're willing to destroy the earth and to deny the public of all our democratic and human rights to get it. So the question now becomes, Josh Fox, how do we win? What do we do? How do we beat these people, preserve our earth, restore our democracy, have some human dignity mm-hmm. in the face of all these crazy people who are so thoroughly personified by Donald Trump and all his glory? How do we beat these people?
I have two answers. One is up to us, and the other one is can be helped along by us. The first one that's up to us is we simply have to out-organize them. We have to put our faith in the truth that we understand, which is that Americans are suffering, the environment is suffering, and we have to heed that call. And we don't win ever if we don't organize. So organizing is absolutely 100% crucial and key. We also have to try to take over the Democratic Party and educate the Democratic Party as to why they are losing election. I read an outrageous article this morning in the New York Times where Barack Obama was really shaken by the fact that Trump got elected. And he felt, oh, my God, did we push the country too far? And it was so sad because it was so out of touch. And I mean, it was like, no, you didn't push the country far enough. We had a so-called recovery, and 95% of that recovery under Barack Obama went to the 1%. We had fracking galore. We saw violence and economic inequality escalate. We saw emissions increase. We saw all of these things that didn't go far enough. And guess what? The minimum wage is still down at $7 or something, and $7.25 an hour. This is outrageous. So for Obama to say, oh, my God, we went too far, we should have been more conservative, it's exactly the wrong lesson. I remember going into the White House to talk to them about offshore drilling. They had proposed to open up the Atlantic and the Pacific to offshore drilling. I went in there. I said, are you crazy? Are you so out of touch that you don't understand? I presented them with a book of 1,000 resolutions from every single coastal town of the Atlantic Ocean saying, are you out of your mind? We don't want offshore drilling. I mean, this is how in a bubble they were in Washington. They did not understand the depth of suffering of the American people. They did not understand where that outrage and that indignation and that cry for real progressive politics was coming from, which is why Bernie Sanders came up and it shocked the hell out of them. They didn't know what the hell was going on. They didn't know what he was talking about because they're living in a bubble. These people are all millionaires. They're driven around in limousines every single minute of their lives. They don't understand the real suffering of the American people. And we are in a crisis. Our infrastructure is falling apart. Our public sphere is eroded. We will not tax the wealthy. We have an environmental chaos on our hands in terms of fracking, and we have climate, creating the worst wildfires we've ever seen, the worst extreme storms we've ever seen. Infrastructure collapsing, our education system collapsing, our medical system collapsing and unaffordable for most people. And Obama saying, oh, my God, we went too far. Unbelievable. Outrageous. We absolutely need to take over the Democratic Party and educate them. We need to say to them, listen, your values are with us, but you're not on the same planet. You're not living in the same country. This, you've got to get rid of the Wall Street banks that took away people's homes. Those people should be in jail. The fracking industry that toxified people's aquifers, these are people responsible for criminal negligence. You know, so these politicians that take money from these huge corporations and say, oh, well, we didn't go, maybe we went too far. I mean, this is outrageous. We know.
Yeah,
everybody knows. Heart of hearts, Bernie would have won. Hillary was out of touch. Obama's legacy was completely marred because the guy was not paying attention, and he decided to assign as his successor a completely out of touch corporate, pro-war, pro-fracking, unlikable person named Hillary Clinton. And that was his big mistake. Had the Democrats seen the writing on the wall and gone with Bernie Sanders, we would be living in a radically different country right now, with a very, very different sense of spirit and adventure and care and compassion and enthusiasm. Instead, we're stuck with fascism and authoritarianism and racism and sexism and all the worst qualities that we could identify in America. So, you know, we have to go in and educate that Democratic Party. By the way, Hillary Clinton would be the president if she was anti-fracking. There's enough anti-fracking votes in Washington, in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, in Wisconsin that said, I don't know who to vote for. I'm staying home. I'm voting for Jill Stein, to have made her the president. There are enough, and I'll tell you this right now, ExxonMobil is about to invade Texas. ExxonMobil has pledged $50 billion to frack Texas, Louisiana, the Gulf Coast, and New Mexico. That is a huge opportunity to create outrage in Texas and turn Texas blue. But the only way we turn Texas blue is if blue turns anti-fracking, because we'll get those votes. We'll get those people. That's what we have to do. We have to. We both have to go out and organize, but we also have to educate that Democratic Party and take it over, and not make it susceptible from the specious and I would say insincere campaigns and attacks that are coming from the Green Party. Which are not really running a serious campaign, which are running ego campaigns, but snipe enough votes to steal the true spirit of America away from, you know, what could be a party, the Democratic Party, that actually has some values. We have to make that happen. We cannot give up on that conversation, period.
We're talking with Josh Fox, the maker of Gasland 2, Awake, A Dream from Standing Rock, a fabulous one-man show going around, just started going around the country. Was that your first performance last night here in L.A.?
It was the first performance in L.A. I've been doing the show. We've been workshopping it, right? So testing out. And, of course, it's a moving target. Like, the news keeps changing. When I first started doing the show back in November, Rex Tillerson was still our Secretary of State. And now it's Mike Pompeo. So we have to integrate that into the show. We have to talk about how it went from ExxonMobil in charge to the Koch brothers in charge. Whoa, big change there. You know, so there's some things that get updated every time I do it. And, you know, you're always trying to tighten it and make certain things hit harder and you know, understand the punch of certain sections in different ways and performing it in different ways. So I've been performing it and revising it in a long process, basically since September. And so this was the first one here. I do it in San Francisco on Sunday, again in New York on Wednesday. All of these are workshop, small, intimate performances for about 100 people. And then we take it out in the fall on a big scale, opening on 9/11 in the town hall in New York City.
Good for you. So let's now talk about the real problem facing this country, which is the Democratic Party. You know, here we have a country that's revulsed by this scumbag in the White House, and I get emails every day from Nancy Pelosi talking about how terrible Donald Trump is, but the Democrats have no program to offer. And there's no alternative being offered. As Bucky Fuller said, the real way to make change is to offer a better paradigm, to paraphrase what he's saying. And the Democrats are offering nothing. I am writing a history of the United States. It's almost done. And I'm comparing. I've gotten to Obama. It gets really, really depressing when Clinton, Bush, and Obama come to power, because you know that the country basically is flatlined. The premise of the book is that U.S. history has gone in six cycles, that they've gotten shorter, they've formed a spiral, and that spiral peaked in 1992. American democracy essentially was every bit as dead as Soviet communism when Bill Clinton took power, and he was awful. Bill Bush was just as bad, and Obama was so frustrating because he's this brilliant guy. Nobody handled the theatrics or the mechanics of the being president better in our entire history than Barack Obama. Yet he was completely bereft of social progress and of ecological protection. So, and if you compare the two crashes, the 1929 crash, you had a Democrat who was in a wheelchair come in with an amazing woman and screamed about the malefactors of great wealth, put together a superstructure, a substructure of financial regulation that really lasted 70 years, that the Glass-Steagall and the FDIC and all the other, the SEC, all the other things that the alphabet agencies that Franklin Roosevelt put in place, the New Deal, all the social programs. And he also, by the way, was our only president in the 20th century who did not invade other countries. He had a good neighbor policy. We actually did not overthrow. And it's good leaders and installed dictators throughout the first 8 years of the Franklin Roosevelt presidency. You compare that with Barack Obama. He confronts another great crash, the crash of 2007 and 2008. He pulls all the bankers into a room who Franklin Roosevelt was screaming at us about being malefactors of great wealth. And he says, guys, what do you need? He says, well, they say, well, we need $7 trillion if you follow Nomi Prinz and her work. They conjured up $7 trillion to the Fed and whatever, handed over basically a blank check, nailed one agency. The only company that went down in 2007-08 was Shearson Leaven, and that was because the CEO was having a tiff with the Secretary of Treasury, which is strictly personal. And then Barack Obama comes out with a stimulus package, which was about a seventh or less of the handout that he gave to the big banks. He demands nothing. He dismantles even more of the regulatory agencies, starts no social programs, does Obamacare, which is barely a tenth of what we need in terms of health care, and spends 8 years, I don't know, what did he do for 8 years, besides let them go crack. And now we have, Nancy Pelosi, we have Chuck Schumer, we have, what's the guy's name, the head of the party, Tom Perez. God help us. I've met Tom Perez. There's no there. I mean, there's nothing going on in the Democratic Party except that they're not Trump. And I would say to you, Josh Fox, that the leaders of the Democrats, you talk about educating them. I think these people are educated. I think they're just completely corrupt. I think the leadership of the Democratic Party is more comfortable with Donald Trump than they are with Bernie Sanders. And their policies and their commitments.
The Democratic Party is the problem, but the Democratic Party is also currently our only solution. I mean, we have close. We almost had Keith Ellison win. Don't forget, we came closer than we ever have to actually have a real progressive in charge of the Democratic Party. Tom Perez. Yeah, that was a horrible moment. But we came very close to winning that. Our revolution is winning 50% or nearly 50% of the primaries and the races that are being put in front. And most of them are running as Democrats. Bernie Sanders, if he runs, it is my belief he will run as a Democrat. And I think that, I mean, what is the alternative? And I'll ask you this, because I'll tell you this. California organizers who are brilliant, notwithstanding, I have gone across the country over the last 10 years and watched an environmental movement get born that has been absolutely exquisite and astounding, a movement on fracking, a movement for divestment, a movement for climate justice, a movement against Keystone XL, a really amazing frontline fighters, a movement at Standing Rock. I have not seen the Green Party figure out how to take that enthusiasm, galvanize it, and work with it. They have been absent. I do not find Jill Stein in any way a compelling presence. In fact, she failed to divest her own personal holdings of her own $7 million fortune from things like mutual funds, which include Shell, Chevron, and Exxon. And she gets nailed for it in the race. So listen to me for a second. Don't interrupt, because
well,
this
the
is very
Party
important
is not the
right
problem.
Now. The Green Party
is
part of the problem. No, I don't agree with you there. I don't agree with you at all. The Green Party is willing to put out candidates who are insincerely mounting presidential campaigns, right? But they are not at the ground level doing the work, by and large, across the country. That is notwithstanding California. I've seen a lot of great Green Party organizers in California and places like that. And I say this to my own peril, in terms of the ire I might cause with certain people who really care about fracking and certain people who really care about this. But I'll tell you this. Here's my principal argument right now against the Green Party is this. The Green Party goes out there and says, we want ranked choice voting. We want ranked choice voting. We want to be able to vote for Jill Stein. And if Jill Stein doesn't have anywhere near a plurality, that vote will go to our second choice. And our second choice, obviously, in the last election, would have been Hillary Clinton. No question in my mind. It would have been Hillary Clinton, right? So if you believe in ranked choice voting, that is exactly the same thing as saying don't campaign in swing states. Don't make a challenge in swing states to the peril of making progressives help getting Donald Trump elected. That is enormously insincere. And it's terrible strategy. It's just terrible strategy. It is faithless in our movement. Our movement, listen to me for a second here. Don't interrupt me right now for a second. Our movement has had enormous clout in forming alliances to push neoliberals to do the right thing. Andrew Cuomo was never going to ban fracking, but the strength of our movement put so much pressure on Andrew Cuomo, he banned fracking. Now, he had a moral obligation to listen to his constituents. The Republicans do not do that. Democrats, on occasion, will do that. But I'll tell you right now, if we had a Republican in office in New York State, the anti-fracking movement would not have succeeded. And that is what I'm trying to say. If we had language in that platform document that would have nailed Hillary Clinton to the wall had she tried to push us on fracking and tried to push frack gas power plants. We were there, Bill McKibben, myself, Dr. Cornel West, Deborah Parker, Ben Jealous. We were in there hammering that thing out. And for the Green Party to come in and say, oh, it's worthless, that was the most cynical, most egotistical, and most insincere political move that anyone could have done when they refused to lift a finger at the local level. And I cannot tell you, I think you have an ire and anger against the Democrats. Well, I'll tell you right now, I find what they're doing absolutely destructive. And you can run in local elections, run in congressional elections, but don't play spoiler in a presidential race when Donald Trump is on the ballot. Just don't. Drop out in swing states. Drop out in swing states. That's all I've ever been saying. You want to build the party? Let's go build the Green Party. But don't do it to your own detriment. Don't create the ire of true progressives that really want to see this country change.
Talking with the great Josh Fox here, the maker of Gasland and One Man Show going on the road. Josh, I'm this. You know, as a historian, I've read this dialogue for 100 years between people trying to change the Democratic Party and people in the third party. We were put in this box exactly 100 years ago when Woodrow Wilson destroyed the Socialist Party of Eugene V. Debs. And I'm very thrilled and very excited that Bernie Sanders is willing to call himself a socialist. And that whole dialogue needs to be revived. The Green Party is what it is. There's always going to be a Green Party or an equivalent. What we have to do is take over the Democratic Party, as you're right. There are two Democratic parties. There's the corporatists, and there's the Sandinista, at this point, is what it's called, or the left of the progressive, a term I actually don't like, progressive, because progressives at the turn of the century, were the previous century, were Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson, and they were awful, awful, awful.
Yeah.
So,
I hear what you're trying to say.
So to me, you got to remember, as someone who's worked in the election protection movement, to me, the presence of Greens is they're always going to be there. There will always be a third party. There will always be back and forth. There's no sense railing at it. What we do have to do, I agree, is take over the Democratic Party. And the number one thing, taking over the Democratic Party, is to make sure that we have a fair vote count. And I will guarantee you, you can talk about the Greens or Ralph Nader in 2000, I guarantee you that those votes, no matter how many votes Ralph Nader got or didn't get in 2000, Jeb Bush was going to rig that election. No matter how many votes Jill Stein got in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Pennsylvania in 2016, it was the rigging of the vote that threw the election, not the president.
Well, I doubt that the Democratic governor of Pennsylvania and Ed Rendell's whole political machine failed to throw the election.
No, but they were sweet.
I'm a Pennsylvania
person. They really were sweet.
So I know.
Wisconsin,
let me just say this.
No doubt.
Let me say this, though. All I have to say on the subject, again, if Greens stand for ranked choice voting, which they do, which they should be campaigning for, ranked choice voting, over and over and over again, it is utterly cynical to say I stand for ranked choice voting and not drop out in swing states, because that is where the ranked choice voting would crucially count.
You can say that, Justin, but you're such a powerful voice. I think you need to put the Green Party in the box of its own, deal with it, and then move on. And the to coin a phrase. And the most important thing we need to do, and you're going to be introduced by Greg Palast, is to get voting machines and that actually have electronic ballot images and have people vote on paper ballots and make sure that we protect the voter rolls. That is way more significant and incredibly important to preserving our elections. Because I will tell you, without a slightest bit of hesitation, that in 2000, okay, Al Gore won, he should have been president. 2004, John Kerry won, he should have been president. And in 2016, for all her faults, Hillary Clinton won. And you have to remember that Hillary Clinton not only won the election, she turned around and walked away. How much has Al Gore and Hillary Clinton and John Kerry done to get rid of the Electoral College since 2000?
Oh, I know.
Responsible.
Or Obama. Or Obama to protect the vote, as you said. You know, look, there have been study after study after expert in terms of our democracy has said the same thing over and over and over again. The only way you have a provable election is you have a paper ballot that proves it.
Okay, and
so we
absolutely must
protect
our election. We're going to have to conclude.
You're right.
Josh, you're fantastic. Paper ballot and tracking. We'll be back with you. See you again next week.
All right.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks very much.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world.
Will we multiply? Needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce.